Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. Welcome everyone to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in building wealth through real estate. I'm your host, Lauren Wells, and joining me today is Ben Fredericks.
Hi, how are you Lauren. Doing today? I'm doing great, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Now, Ben, after careers at different Fortune 500 companies like Lehman Brothers, New York Life, and Allstate, he became a full-time investor in 2016 and has since done over 500 transactions. Primarily, he's focused on buying properties from auction and flipping, but he has also created over 100 seller finance notes, which we will talk about today. And he is currently partner at Noteworthy, which has their event coming up, which we will also talk about in a little bit. He also owns 35 single family rentals, 19 multifamily, and runs two Airbnb vacation properties. You have a lot going for you and you've done a lot. So Where do you want to start? Well, actually, tell me about being in like corporate world, so to speak, and kind of what that was like and what the change, what caused the change and where you wanted to go with your...
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting transition. Obviously, I started out, I was a real estate investor when I was working for Lehman Brothers. My background was mortgage. And then I went into the banking side and that's where my career was focused with them. And I might still be there today if it wasn't for the recession and they're going out of business. So it was kind of by attrition that I got out of the corporate world. Now, it didn't immediately end there. I spent another 8 years in financial services between New York Life and Allstate, which I hated every single minute of. And my wife decided once the recession kind of like took, because she had lost her position as well. She was working for JP Morgan Chase, and she decided to reinvent herself and become a chiropractor. And I was like, look, once you're done with that, I'm getting back into real estate. I wasn't real sure how I was going to do that because we had gotten crushed. I mean, with real estate that we had bought during our time at when things were going great we just bought at the wrong time. It was a lack of education. So it wasn't like we were buying these dangerous loans where we were putting no money down or whatever. We were actually putting money into the deals. We were just like a lot of people. You kind of got caught at the wrong place at the wrong time. And that it kind of was what it was. But basically, the transition happened where Tony Robbins talks about this sometimes, where you just get to a point where you've had enough and like, you're like, all right, I can't keep living my life like this. I was miserable at work. I wasn't enjoying my career. I only was doing it because it was one few places you could actually get a job in 2008. Yeah. And once I think the biggest change, the thing that made me made the jump was my daughter was born. And I was like, I don't want to be a guy that is showing my daughter that he'll just be miserable and go through life not doing, pursuing his passions. And so I just started putting out into the world kind of what I wanted. I started reading a lot, listening to a ton of podcasts, and really just trying to get my education to where it needed to be, where it wasn't before. And so I just started devouring stuff, going to different events and all that. And at some point it just kind of clicks.
Yeah. I love that because I feel like right now with all of the layoffs, not in necessarily finance, but in tech, we're seeing a lot of the same. I look at it as like, there's so much opportunity in an odd way to reinvent yourself. And it was a combination of timing and your knowledge of what you had done and capitalizing on that to create that opportunity. And I think we'll see a lot of that come out of what's happening now, even though it probably doesn't seem that way to a lot of people.
It definitely will happen. I mean, if you look back to the last recession, some of the biggest companies were started coming out of it. Uber wasn't even a thing back in 2008. And then shortly thereafter, here comes Uber and Airbnb and all these big, huge companies that we see right now, right? So there's definitely seasons. I mean, obviously there's seasons to our lives and there's seasons to business as well. And I think now one of the things I'm really studying and trying to learn a lot about is AI. Like, I think that is going to be one thing that's going to be a game changer potentially for people that are on the forefront of it when it comes to investing. Obviously, the tech people might have an advantage over us, people that are not tech people, but it's something I'm definitely looking at for sure.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. I know we're kind of going off topic a little bit, but tell me about kind of what you think will happen and how you think AI will give, what the impact of that could be with people who are looking to invest or kind of get started.
Yeah, I think ultimately it'll be a speed. It'll help increase the speed. And a lot of times that really makes a big difference, right? So when I buy a lot of deals at auction, it's because of speed and people know that we're going to close the deal. So that's why we get some of the deals we get. That's why we get some of the bad deals that we get is because we're buying in bulk and we know like, all right, I'll take them. Like, I don't even need to see them. I don't go out to them. I don't inspect them, nothing. So I make my offers accordingly, obviously, but it's the speed of it. So I think with AI, like I will just have an ability. This is my vision, like in terms of looking at it, like my ability to get even faster will improve. And maybe that's going to be across a multitude of areas. It might not be just real estate investing. It might be investing in different things. So I just think that's just one area that real estate investors can use it.
Awesome. Okay. So you kind of really started consuming all the education you could around real estate. What was like your first deal, your first action that you took to actually have your first investment?
My first investment?
After the recession.
After the recession was, I won't forget it because I had basically had some friends in South Florida that were like, look, they knew I was wanting to get into real estate. They were from South America. They're like, look, we have money. We want to find real estate. We don't have the time because we're building these other businesses. So if you find a deal, let us know and we'll go in on it with you. I mean, we had a trust and rapport from doing deals together before. And so I just started putting out into the universe like what I was looking for. And Craigslist became my best friend, weirdly enough. Like there's some strange people on Craigslist, but you might find something that'll change your life. And I tell people this story all the time. Craigslist actually did change my life. So I had put an ad on Craigslist saying that we had deals to do money. And a guy that is my mentor now, my partner, called me and said, hey, I've got a bunch of these deals from auction. If you can fund them, we can do them together. So that was basically the first step. And then the first deal that I bought, I don't know if you ever saw the show The Wire on HBO back in the day, but it was about cops in Baltimore and like drugs and all this stuff, right? So one of the houses I bought was like a row house in Baltimore, like West Baltimore, not an area you want to hang out in, like very scary. And I bought it for $500. So I was like, you can make money off these deals. He's like, oh yeah, you'll be able to sell that for maybe $3,000-$4,000 and you're in. I was like, okay, well, for me, it was just an experiment. I was like, I can throw $500 away just to see how this works. And so sure enough, I mean, I bought the property and within 60 days, I had sold it for like $3,500 and was on my way. So years later, I think I saw that, that property on an episode of The Wire. So I was like, I think I own that at one point. But yeah, I started very small like that. And then I had built a track record. I just did maybe like 10 deals. And then all I started doing was started sharing my experience. And next thing you know, we had raised $150,000 and we bought 12 deals at one time and just started snowballing from there to we were doing 100 in a year. So
crazy. Yeah. So kind of when you were going through this, did you have a set criteria for states you wanted to invest in, types of properties? And, you know, if so, how did you come up with that criteria?
Yeah, I kind of had to throw some of that stuff out. So here's the thing with auctions, like what you're asking is a great question, because like, if you're in one market, you know, this is my buy box. Like I only want 3.2s. I want 1500 square feet. I want blah, blah, blah. For me, I had to start thinking a little bit differently and I had to unlearn some of the stuff that I had learned just like that. So I had to start looking at deals as they came through on auction and saying, okay, is this typical for the area? Number one. And then number two, if I'm going to be seller financing this, can I sell it and have it be more cheaper price than what local rents are?
Yeah.
So that way it's a no-brainer. Somebody buys this deal, like, why would you screw it up? Because it's going to cost you more to go rent.
Yes.
So, and that was with principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. That was my criteria, really. I wanted to beat the rental market and then was like, okay, does this look like a good starter home for somebody? So I had to kind of flip around how I was looking at deals from an auction standpoint. And then from state to state, like I've bought things from California to Maine. So it's Hawaii to Maine, actually. So it's been all over the place.
Yeah. So you would essentially just look more at kind of like, you were not buy box agnostic, but kind of, you would look at like the exit strategy and if that made sense more than the actual criteria of the property.
Exactly. Yeah. Like we had basically three different ways that we could exit a property, right? So I could go in and just flip that property to somebody local in that market. I could sell or finance it or potentially rent it. So there was different ways that I could look at the deal. But yeah, I mean, your description there is not far off.
Awesome. Agnostic.
That's a great way of looking at it.
I can't take credit for that. One of my colleagues kind of coined something else, asset agnostic. And I was like, oh, that's, I love that term. So, okay. And today you're still buying houses at auction, or did you transition away from that? Because, you know, your portfolio obviously is beyond just single family now. So
yeah, great question. So auctions over the last 2 years have not produced much. Like banks really kind of were like taking a wait and see approach to COVID and like, all right, what are we going to do here? We're going to rework these loans. It wasn't like 2008 where there's just this avalanche of properties coming into the market. So we did have to kind of reinvent ourselves where we were used to buying like anywhere from 10 to 20 deals a month. Now it was going from like 4 to 7 deals a month. And so you're like, okay, that's not sustainable for the model that we had. We need to put money to work. So we actually started buying more rentals. And so in the last, let's call it 120 days, we've added 47 units, single family units to a rental portfolio. We started doing some Airbnbs. And so we had to pivot a little bit, but auctions will always going to fluctuate, right? So there's always going to be peaks and valleys there. And that was one thing, like it took me a while to figure that out. Sometimes my mentor would say, look, there's going to be times where auctions are heavy and sometimes when they're not. He's like, you just have to figure out how to navigate between. And sometimes you want to hear things and sometimes you don't. Because when he would say that to me, we're like in the thick of it. Like so many deals are happening. And you're like, Sure. That's going to happen. And then sure enough, it does. And you're like, oh, I should have listened a little bit sooner. But it's still working out well. I mean, I love the game. We really enjoy what we do. So
kind of two follow-up questions to that. Your prediction for auctions in the next 18 months, where do you see that being? Well, we'll start with that.
This is just hearsay from a lot of the contacts that we have in the business. But a lot of the asset managers are telling our contact in auctions that we can expect auctions to pick up more again, probably in the third quarter of this year.
Yeah.
Now, I heard some of that last year too. So, I mean, I take it with a grain of salt. I don't depend on that happening. So I'm constantly looking for other deals. One thing that we bought a bunch of deals from were wholesalers as well. So wholesalers, they are starting the game. A lot of times, I know wholesalers that just do it professionally, but a lot of them, that's like their foot into the door of real estate investing, right? Where they can actually become an owner. And so we've done deals with wholesalers that they just didn't really know how to structure. So where we've done deals subject to or bought the deal and turned it around and sold it on seller financing, things that they could have done if they had just kind of known about it, but they didn't.
Yeah. And I think that again, it's kind of bringing that creative financing to the table and the money, and then the other person brings the deals and it really makes a good partnership. When you kind of moved, when you pivoted and kind of had to reinvent yourself away from auctions, not that you don't do that anymore, but when you had to expand to keep up with the business model that you wanted, did you then set specific criteria because it was a different kind of buy process?
Yes. Great question. We had to, right? So we had to go into that sort of mindset again. Yeah. Which was, all right, this is a rental. Now we got to think about, all right, what are market rents? Is this the type of square feet that people want? So yeah, we did have to go back to that a little bit. And there were some deals, like we bought a couple of package deals from one seller and most of those fit that buy box. So it was like, okay, we'll take them. So The thing is like, I don't hurt for confidence because we're buying stuff sight unseen. Like usually if a deal comes across my desk, like I can look at it and be like, we'll take it. So has that always worked out? No, but I mean, for the most part, my instincts are pretty good at this point. So I kind of know what I want and what's going to work.
Love it. So as you grew, did you hire, obviously, at what point did you have to scale beyond yourself? You know, you have quite a handful of units at this point. I'm imagining that's all not something that you're managing alone. At what point did you feel in your investment kind of journey that it was necessary to bring on additional help outside yourself?
Pretty quickly. I was like, I always say this is kind of a Ben cliche, but I was like working 8 days a week like John Lennon, right? So it was basically like, I have this new baby at home. I'm excited about what I'm doing. And then as soon as I would come home from the office, I'd work more. I'd work till like 10 o'clock at night, right? I'm like lining up deals and everything else, trying to figure out the accounting. And then I'm at the office on Saturday and Sunday for full days. And I was like, first of all, I'm missing out on my daughter growing up here, and it's not sustainable. So I'm starting to get a little bit burnout.
Isn't that kind of the irony of it? You start all this because of, you know, I have two young boys myself. And that's kind of, again, what was prompted my exit out of the tech world into this. And now I'm like, wow, in the beginning, you really kind of get, you have to go and commit more time to then have more time in like a year, 2 years, 3 years. And I think that's a common misunderstanding I see with people who are investing is, oh, if I invest, I have that financial freedom and time freedom like overnight. And it's really like a long, it doesn't have to be like a 20-year long-term game, but it's not as overnight success as I think a lot of people think. So I love that you brought that up. Like, look, I was working and then I was working at home. I have this little baby at home. It's not like I'm hanging out with her all day and just like cruising because I have a few rental. Like, so I think that was a good point that you made.
Yeah, it was tough. So I read a great book called Rocket Fuel, which is really great. And I recommend it to everybody. Like if you're in a spot where you're trying to grow and you're going to reach your limit, but I'm a high visionary. And so I just learned very early that from an operations standpoint, like that wasn't like where I wanted to be spending my time. But basically what I did was I started just writing down everything that I was doing in a day. I mean, every single thing I was doing from the moment I got up till the moment I went to sleep. And I was like, okay, what are the things on this list that I can just get rid of that I don't need to be doing? These are not making me the money that I want to make. Yep. And so I started making that list, narrowing that down. And I did that exercise for a couple of weeks. So I had this big piece of paper, right? And it was all filled out. And I don't know about anybody else, but I do some of my best thinking on an airplane. I don't know why it is. You just have like the best. You're in the zone, right? There's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
You
know,
you're trying to ignore the people around you and just focus on yourself. And so I went on a trip and we were going to a conference and I had the paper with me and I was taking notes and I walk in and there's this booth and is for virtual assistants. And I was like, all right. So I go over to the guy and I was like, I hand him the piece of paper and I was like, help me. I was like, this is all the stuff that I need done. Do you have someone that can help me? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. So here we are 5 years later, and I still have that same assistant. I have two assistants now. I have an operations manager. So yeah, I mean, as soon as you can get help, do it. Because I mean, that's a long-winded answer to your question, but as soon as you can get help, you should do it because it frees you up to one, do the things that are highest revenue producing, but also to have a life outside of work, which is very important.
Yeah. And I think that's hard for a lot of people who are very entrepreneurial to get to is to give up control. Like you're like, oh, I got that. That's just one little thing. But like one, like you said, you're the visionary. You should be focusing on those higher level things that are going to move the needle further, not filling out the paperwork, doing the due diligence or whatever those things are. So no, I love that. I think it's definitely something that I know I've struggled with personally.
Yeah, it's hard because you're always thinking like, all right, nobody's going to do this as well as I do it, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you just start creating systems and processes that you can manage and check and make sure that they're running efficiently. And I mean, we got so good at it, like the same assistant that I have, like a year ago, I was like, hey, let's start our own assistant company where we know this game already.
Yeah.
And so we can just place people into a system that works, or we know what real estate investors need to do on a day-to-day basis. We know what they're posting in terms of social media content. They know contracts and seller finance and all these different things. I mean, so we're more of a niche in terms of like the note side of it, but it works. And so that's how easy it is to duplicate something. Like once you get the system down, then you just duplicate it and it can run on its own. So
awesome. Okay. So we started with buying properties at auction, pivoting into rentals. Is that where you're at today?
Well, both. I mean, I'm still buying properties at auction. It just happens to be a lot more rentals in the last quarter. But I think now is a great opportunity to buy rentals because people are kind of at the top of where they were. And we've seen the market start to correct a little bit. Even there's been articles in terms of rents starting to come down. So I think a lot of the landlords, especially after COVID, were kind of tired. And so these deals are kind of easy to get right now if you've got the funds to take them down. But even if you don't, that's where the creativity comes into play, right? Especially if you know notes, like if it's in your wheelhouse to create a note or buy a note, you should be very, very good at pitching how to get the seller to finance it to you.
Oh, so I love this. I'm actually going to ask you to do that. So if I was a seller and you were trying to pitch me, what would your pitch be?
Well, I think one of the key questions is like for a seller is one, how many properties do you have? So a lot of people just start with the one that they're looking at. Now, I always ask, is this the only property? So that has gotten me packages of deals. The next question I want to ask them is like, all right, do you need all of that money now? If you get all that money, what are you going to be doing with it? I know that's kind of a personal question, but just out of curiosity, like if I wrote you a check for $200,000 today for these properties, what are you going to do with that money? And then I just shut up and I listen. And, you know, a lot of times they go, well, I'm going to do this, that, or the other. I'm like, okay, well, how much of that are you going to owe to the IRS? And sometimes they forget about that, right? So, and I say, well, what if we could reduce your tax bill and give you this money over a period of time? I'll give you a chunk of money now, and then I'll give you the rest over a period of time. So I'm willing to buy it at your price, just at my terms. And so that's gotten me a bunch of deals. So that's like the most simple way of just giving you a 1 minute answer on that.
No, I think that's great. And I think it's something that our listeners like to hear is people often talk about, you have to like talk to the sellers or this is what you should do. But actually walking through what that looks like for someone who's new to investing or just starting to where you were at 10, 11 years ago when you were consuming all that content and information, I think it's really valuable to hear. This is what I would do. This is what I've done. And these are the questions I ask.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't work every single time. So a lot of times people need the money now. So there might be a health situation or partnership that needs to be paid out or whatever the case may be. But that's where private money comes into play. So if you're very, very good at doing that, that solves the problem too.
Yeah. And I think you've touched upon a few things as you've been talking is one, the education that you really like immersed yourself in the beginning, but then also it seems like you've built, and this comes up on, I would say like every other podcast episode we record, the network of people that you've kind of surrounded yourself with, from your mentor to people that have deals when you have money. So how did you start establishing kind of that network?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, I started going to events, right? And meeting people, which is really not my strong suit. You know,
I'm actually shocked by that.
Really? Yeah. Well, if you knew me well, you would know I'm highly introverted. So like to be here with you right now is a struggle. Like I really have to push myself to do it, which is funny because I get on stage at Noteworthy and get up in front of people and all that stuff. But yeah, it's really produces a lot of anxiety. So like usually at like events, like I would be the guy standing in the corner, like, all right, how do I get out of here? But yeah, I really just kind of forced the issue there for myself, getting out and meeting people. Now, look, for me, I love talking about real estate. So that does make it a little bit easier. I think a lot of that stems from me being like in the financial services space. I hated talking to people about that. So it took me a while to get over it. I was almost like post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah. But once I did, like I could easily sit and talk to people about real estate because it's fun for me. It's a game. It's like Monopoly. So it's just whatever. But yeah, I think going to events is really good. Joining masterminds, I'm in a couple of those. So I get to hang around with like-minded people. They get to know me and understand what it is that I do. So if you can get into those kinds of spaces, you'd be amazed the people that you can meet, like that are, they want to do deals. They are wanting to meet people that are doing deals. It's all very synergistic once you get comfortable doing it.
I love that. And I love that you said you're an introvert, because hopefully people listening know I'm clearly an extrovert, but we'd have a whole episode on networking. And from my perspective, it's very different. Like, and it's good to see, like, here's someone else's perspective who is an introvert. And like, this is what I did, even though it wasn't super comfortable. You really focused on what you love talking about, which is real estate.
Yeah. And then I also like learning about other people too, like what they're doing. So, I mean, it makes it a whole lot easier when you're networking if you just ask about the other person. Yeah. So I much prefer that than talking about myself and what it is that I do. So
awesome. Looking forward in the next 18 months, we talked about auction specifically, but are you anticipating any pivots that you'll be making in your business or different areas of financing that you'll be focusing on? You know, I've heard in the last few episodes, subject to is something someone's focusing on or looking into more. So what are your thoughts?
It's funny. Like, one of my major goals for myself this year was to do less. Like most people that are visionaries or entrepreneurial, like it's very easy to get distracted. So you can get ideas to go do this or do that. And so this year I was like, I have a note on my desk, no shiny pennies, like nothing. I'm not chasing any squirrels this year. I'm just focusing on the thing. And the thing is cash flow. If it produces cash flow and it's real estate related, let's go. If it's not, I'm not in. That's one thing I think I've spent a lot of time over the last couple of years learning, is that distractions, they're not worth it. Like, just focus on the one thing. And every time that I've done that, I've grown substantially. So it's when I take my eye off the ball that I'm missing. So yeah, I'm doing less. That's it. I'm doing more deals, but I'm doing less of everything else. So
focus on what you know, your system that works.
Yeah, that's it. So there's no real secret sauce to it. I mean, that's just it. Just do the work, focus, and go.
Love it. So talk to me about Noteworthy. You became a partner in the company after attending their events. I'm assuming that's one of the events you were talking about having attended for several years. So how did that come to be, and kind of tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Yeah. So Noteworthy is where I learned the business. I initially went there as a vendor because like Dodd-Frank was a big thing. And so my mentor, when I first started working with him, he's like, yeah, you should get your mortgage license again, because a lot of the investors I'm working with, they need help with this Dodd-Frank thing. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do that. So I went and got that done in like 2 weeks. And then I started being a loan originator for all these investors. So I was like really kind of learning from the inside out how to do all this stuff. And so there was this conference called Noteworthy. And so one of my mentors, investors, told me about it. He's like, come out to California and you can come check it out. So I was like, okay. So I went out there and I started out as a vendor. And so I would have my little booth there and talking to investors and getting real comfortable talking to people about whatever. But when the breaks were over, when people were speaking or educating from the stage, I'd be in there just like taking notes on everything. And so I was essentially getting a free education on notes as well. And so I did that for several years. And then I stopped doing the MLO thing because I just didn't have time for it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I kept going to Noteworthy because I was great to learn and whatever. And a few years ago, I got Note Investor of the Year. They were gracious enough to give me that. And then Aaron, one of the owners, Aaron Holderman, called me and said, hey man, I'm curious if you'd have an interest in joining me in Noteworthy. And I was like, you know what? I would. I never considered it, but I would, because it's given me so much that for me, I just looked at it as an opportunity to give back, because these putting on events, they're not big money makers. That's not why you do it. Like, you get to be a center of influence and you get to meet a lot of people and do more deals and things like that. But we also get to help people, which is really cool. Like, some of the people that have never done a note deal, it's exciting to see them like get it and start to put things together that I could do more than just wholesaling, or I could do more than just a rental property. I'm probably leaving deals on the table. But I told him when we started, I was like, look, man, if I get involved, I'm not getting involved in an organization where it's like, all right, run to the back of the room and buy our $40,000 coaching program. I was like, I don't want to be a part of any of that. So I just want to keep it strictly educational. Let's build like a tribe of people. And that's what we've done. So we've always had great speakers that come out. They want to give. Like, these are people that have been doing it for a long time. And those are the only people we have out. Like, if you've got a course to sell, I'm not interested in having you. But it's a passion project for sure. I mean, we have one coming up here at the end of February in Anaheim, California. So I'm excited for that. It's always a lot of work and a lot of stress leading up to it. And I always say, no more events. I'm not doing any more events. And then afterwards, I'm like, all right, we'll do another one. Because they do end up being a lot of fun. We get to hang out with people that we don't see, but maybe once or twice a year. And deals are always done. Like, they're just always done. And that's a big reason why I got involved.
Yeah. And I mean, I want to say for those people listening right now, going to a conference where it isn't a pitch fest of people pitching courses, masterminds, programs, mentorships is pretty rare these days. So I love that. I love that it's more educational focused. Yeah, you probably have sponsors, but like, I love that it's people who want to be there to actually educate rather than get people to sign up for their program. That's awesome. As someone who has been to a lot of events, that's super refreshing to hear.
Yeah. And I don't belittle people that sell courses. No. Like, I think I've learned a ton from courses. I just want there to be some more connection that's above and beyond like doing a course. So
yeah, for sure. And I mean, when I started out in notes, I definitely took a few courses that were super helpful in getting started and have a few mentors that came from that industry. So, but I agree. I think it just provides better conversation when that's off the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So what can people expect at this event in a few weeks?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it because we've got some amazing people coming out. So our in-house trainer, Kevin Shortell, he always goes through like the underwriting process that he uses to underwrite like big packages of notes, like how he's going through everything, due diligence, understanding, performing, non-performing, how to make the right offer, all that good stuff. Then a good friend of mine, Dan Zatofsky, who I learned how to raise private money from, helped me raise millions of dollars in private money, is going to come out and basically give his entire presentation on how he raises private money and something that he charges like thousands of dollars for people to go see. I was like, look, you can come out, but you're going to do it. Yeah. You're going to give it to people. So I'm super stoked for that. I've got an expert coming out on subject two. So he's going to tell you how he's creatively acquiring a bunch of deals right now using that, just because so many low interest rate mortgages were done over the last 5-10 years. It's ripe for the picking.
Yeah. So, well, especially with the layoffs, there's a lot of work. It's going to be a win-win for the seller and the person assuming. So
absolutely. Yeah. So I think that's one of the bigger things to learn. And then we have some different things that are maybe not necessarily related to real estate, but are also cash flow based. So different types of investments that you can make that are passive. And I can't say enough, like the people that we have coming out, I'm not going to give the entire thing away, but you can go to our site, obviously, and see kind of what our agenda is. I have a foreclosure specialist coming out from California to teach you how to buy foreclosures before they even get to the market. So I'm going to be talking about seller finance and how we've done a bunch of deals, created notes from auction properties. So there's a ton to be learned.
Love it.
The idea, you know what the idea really is? Is that, Lauren, when people go home, they have something that they can actually take immediate action on and start executing. Like, we always tell people, look, you're going to get a bunch of information, but the idea is to pick one or two things and then start hammering on that. And then you can come back and keep picking up other stuff along the way, but just start taking action and executing on one or two things as soon as you get home. And they're going to leave with the tools to do that.
Well, shoot, that was a great segue into like my kind of question that I always love to ask everybody is this podcast. We kind of retransitioned it or rebranded it in July of this year and really focus each episode on like, what is an action item that you would, or a piece of advice that's actionable for someone starting out in real estate today? Like, I don't know, for example, 2 weeks ago, someone laid out their entire, if I was starting over, here'd be my 3-year plan, which was like wild. That was the first time that had happened. It was pretty awesome. But what would you say if you were starting today would be your piece of advice for someone who is looking to leave their 9-to-5 and build something for themselves?
Yeah. I actually did an Instagram post about this the other day. Ooh. So yeah.
I'll go share it after this episode. Yeah.
So it was like, basically, I think the first thing that you need to do is you need to learn how to properly evaluate a deal. Doesn't matter if it's a rental or a fix and flip or whatever, or a note, you have to learn exactly how to evaluate that deal and then understand that you need to stick to the numbers, right? So I never get emotional about a deal. There have been deals that I really, really wanted, but I wouldn't go above the number. And sometimes you just have to walk away. So the next thing that I would do is, if you're interested in notes, like the number one thing I would do if you're interested in notes is read Jimmy Napier's book, Invest in Debt. Like, I think that's the blueprint really to understand notes, and to understand notes in a couple of different ways. Because if you understand what note buyers want, you can go out and create them, right? So you're creating the market for what people already want, the product that they already want to buy, right? So I think that's probably the next thing. And then I would learn rental and figuring out like subject to and all that. And I'm giving you more than one thing here, but this was sort of like my checklist. And then get great at raising private money. I think that's going to be like the catalyst over the next 12 to 18 months, because there's going to be a lot of money sitting on the sidelines if a recession digs in, where people are going to be scared. If you get very confident and very good at raising money, and you can show people how they're going to make money and most importantly, get paid back, like that'll be a huge separator for you as an investor.
Yeah. I was talking to someone about that. He said pretty much almost what you said is one of your last points was like, if you have the money, everything else will follow. People will know you can close. If you have the money, the deals will come. Obviously you have to have that network, but if people know that you're serious, you close, you have the funding, typically everything else falls in line.
Yeah, it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, it's the difference between going from a couple of deals a year because you're scraping together your own funds.
Yeah.
If you can use OPM, you can really start to scale it up.
And so did you start? That's actually a question I didn't ask in the beginning. Yeah. When you were you starting with your money or other people's money?
Yeah, we started with our own.
Okay. And at what point, like how many deals in did you say, okay, I like this, this is working?
Yeah.
And when it comes to raising private money, how did you start?
So we went to our natural market. We went to our natural market first, right? So that was one thing I did actually learn in the financial services business is you go to your natural market first, because they know you, they trust you, and it's just a little bit easier conversation to have sometimes. But basically, yeah, that was the thing we did. We did about five or six deals, and then we had a spreadsheet, and then I just created a presentation and it said, here's what we've done. Here's what we could do if we had more money. And we could bring you in as a partner. We could pay you a percentage, interest rate, whatever. And so that was like the catalyst for our first round of private money, which is, I think it was about $120,000. And then it just went up from there.
Love it. Well, Ben, tell our audience where they can find you, where they can connect, and how they can follow you.
Yeah. So I spend most of my time on Instagram, I guess, which I don't really like to, but I do. It's at Benjamin Fredericks. So you can find me there. And then obviously you can connect with us through Noteworthy. We have a couple of different Noteworthy pages. So we have like a Note Investors page. So if you just type in Noteworthy into Facebook, you'll find us. And then noteworthyusa.com, and you'll find our events. And we also, by the way, we publish a great newsletter that you can subscribe to for practically nothing. And it's full of great content every single month on being an entrepreneur, on note investing, on rentals and subject to and private money and all that good stuff. Self-directed IRAs. Tons of great information in there that you would find helpful. So those are the places I think you can connect with me best.
I love it. Well, thanks so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Any final thoughts?
I'm just glad to be here, believe it or not. So, you know, this was great actually. So I always say that at the end, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm glad I did that. But today I'm actually genuinely glad I did this. So this was nice. So thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I was worried there for a second when you're like, this is a lot.
No, this was great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us today on this episode of the CWS podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show, and leave us a review.